agenda, so as a reward we get to move on to paper 5A early. So moving on to agenda, hopefully we'll be able to finalise. We have Craig here, so that's good. Right, shall we do 5B first, actually, because we need... Okay, so moving on to agenda paper 5B, taxes, interest and penalties.
So agenda paper 5B, in March, the committee published our tentative agenda decision on interest and penalties related to income taxes. This resulted from comments the committee received on the draft interpretation on certain tax brackets. In March, the committee considered research on interest and penalties and concluded that a project on interest and penalties is not a higher priority than other active projects. In the tentative agenda decision, the committee highlighted that an entity would assess whether IAS 12 applies, if not, then apply IAS 7 to interest and penalties. The agenda decision also highlighted relevant disclosure requirements. The committee received 5 comment letters. 3 respondents agreed with the committee for the reasons outlined in the tentative agenda decision. 2 respondents said they were aware of diversity when accounting for interest and penalties. Since the March meeting, we have also been provided with additional research. This included reviews of IFRS and US GAAP financial statements and a qualitative survey of 6 countries' tax legislation. In our view, the information obtained does not highlight that the accounting for interest and penalties is in greater need for improvement than, for example, the accounting for taxes more generally. Therefore, we continue to agree with the committee's tentative conclusion that the project on interest and penalties not a higher priority than other projects. We recommend that the committee finalise the agenda decision. Some respondents raised concerns about assessing whether interest and penalties are income taxes. We do not recommend adding commentary on these matters to the agenda decision. This is because to do so, in our view, would be interpretive in nature and would not be supported by existing requirements. We recommend finalising the tentative agenda decision with some editorial changes to bullet A to align the wording with that used in the basis for conclusion of IFRIC 23. I will now ask whether you agree with our recommendation to finalise the agenda decision.
Just going to nod. Anybody got any comments?
I mean, I'm happy to finalise the agenda decision or to support finalising it, but I don't think we should be saying that we're doing it because it's not a higher priority than other projects. I'm not sure that the prioritisation is part of why we put things on the agenda or not as a committee, and I think it lacks a bit of credibility because, like, we're having one-day meetings. How come it's almost like we don't have time to do it, but actually... our agenda's not full, so why would we say... So I don't like the fact that it says that, we immediately concluded a project is not a higher priority. If we conclude that there's no real diversity or financial reporting is not necessarily improved or made any better by dealing with the diversity, that's fine, but I'm quite uncomfortable issuing an agenda decision that says we're not doing it because it's not a higher priority than other things.
We had a bit of a chat about this yesterday, actually, internally in preparation for the meeting, and I think that by focusing on the committee, maybe it's not helping because you're having shorter meetings. But I guess both the committee and the board, when we're thinking about what we should be working on, we're not just thinking about how many hours in the day we've got to spend on things, it's how much disruption we cause to the system for people outside the building, and whether that's justified in the context of all the other things we're asking people to comment on. So I think your point is probably fair. We need to be careful in terms of how we phrase that.
And just to add to Sue, we thought sometimes as well, John, that you know, I think in the past sometimes we've heard, as you say, that if the committee is saying no to doing standard setting and the argument is given, which is that, you know, this is not very widespread, or you know, there isn't very significant effects. I think sometimes there's been criticism as well in the past, because for the people that it does affect, there's in, but you know, it matters to me, so how have you rejected on that basis? And I suppose this was just, I suppose, thinking a bit wider, and maybe this, it's trying to maybe give a bit better flavour as to what is now in the minds, when, you know, when the board did its agenda consultation, and maybe in the minds of the committee as well, is that we're not saying this is not necessarily an important topic, you know, for everybody. It is for some people, but when we look at priorities and we look at how much change we impose on, you know, the outside world, then it hasn't sort of hit the pecking order above other things.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand why we would not put it on the agenda, given the outreach and the analysis and the research that's been done. I suppose I don't see that as being a prioritisation issue. I just see that as being that we don't really think that there's a major benefit to financial reporting of dealing with the issues. So rather than it's been an internal, rather than it being an internal prioritisation issue.
Okay. As I said, you're not the only one to have noticed that.
Maybe we could enhance that explanation.
Yes, maybe we should try and come up with some better words to describe. Bruce?
To start off with exactly the same comment, I felt that, look, I mean, we've accepted the diversity, we're going to take a decision to either go one way or the other. My only comment then was, well, we're kind of just saying we're not taking this on full stop. I then felt that everything, to me, in the last part of the agenda is stating the obvious, so I don't really believe it added a huge amount of value to the questions being asked or how we should address it. I mean, we're saying, well, if you think it's a tax, applies 12. If you think it's not, applies 37. And then kind of detailing what the disclosures are within those standards. Even going as far as ICE-1, I just felt that we're kind of saying, guys, we use one or the other. Go ahead and apply those as required. That was mine.
But I wonder sometimes whether things are obvious to us because it's our day job and it's not so obvious to everybody.
And normally I'd agree with you. Normally, I mean, I like the idea of us giving guidance. But I mean, if you think about it, the first one we're saying, consider particular amounts payable. If you considered interest and tax to be in IS-12, apply IS-12. Okay.
But I think we've got at least one letter that sort of seemed to question the order of
that. I just find that the...
Or even the thing that it does, sorry to butt in, is it kind of clarifies it's not a policy choice. I think there are people out there today that think this is a policy choice. And what that does is effectively say that it is not a policy choice.
Yes. That's why. Better expression of what I was saying.
Well, I think, I mean, sure. I think we're going to, yeah. I don't want to reopen the discussion because we obviously have that a lot of that. You know, when you come out with an agenda decision that says, guys, we're saying you can apply either IS-12 or IS-37. We stated that in the first paragraph. You've got to apply one or the other. Okay. We're then saying, well, we're not going to tell you which one because it's not a... Well, we haven't got the time to do it or whatever we decide we're going to put in there. We haven't got a reason to do it. So, I mean, wow, if we're saying that this isn't a policy choice, then I think we've got to be very careful how we've worded this, because if you read the first paragraph, we're pretty much saying it is.
Because the first, well, it's interesting you say, because I think the intention of the first sentence in A is to say an entity needs to consider a particular amounts of payable income taxes, which means you need to look at the definition of an income tax and you're either in or you're not. You can choose whether whether you feel like you've got an income tax or not.
And obviously there will be, you know, judgment involved in making that assessment, but it's trying to say at least you have to make the assessment. The first assessment is, am I in the scope of IS-1? If not, I'm in 37, as opposed to not doing any assessment and just saying, I'm going to...
I agree, and I mean, as I said, the last thing I want to do is reopen this, because I think we discussed it at Norns in the last meeting. All I'm saying is just, I just think that when we're saying that, okay, well, maybe it's just a different reading I've got. I found that...
But I'm asking you a genuine question. When you read A, does that not tell you, is that not how you read it? Did you still think it was a free choice?
Well, I think that the reality is we've set it up above there. I mean, we've said effectively the response to the draft of interpretation said entities can apply either this or that. We've then said, well, in light of the comments, be that we decide not to add it to our agenda and we don't think it's interesting. So we haven't answered the question.
Well, we could say, nonetheless, the committee observed that it's not an accounting policy choice, rather
A and B. I think it's a bit subtle. I think it's a bit too subtle.
Yeah, so I'd be happy if we did that, but I'm saying if you read the first paragraph and everything after that, okay, they're just not there.
Come on.
Sandy, did you want to come in?
Yeah, I guess what I found interesting was the research is that only 6 of 100 people actually told you what the choice they made was. You know, is it either immaterial or, you know, it's just not that important, which begs the question of why are we talking about it, you know?
Yeah, I think maybe that... Yes, Sandy, I think if I... Sorry, Sandy, I was just going to say, I think that the point you're raising, and maybe just to answer your comment, Bruce, about, you know, maybe putting in some of the references to disclosure, is that at least when we did look at financial statements, either it is, as Sandy said, we don't know, maybe it is entirely immaterial for people, but at least there's very little disclosure you see out there. So I think that when we discussed this before, the thought was is that at least it's worth it, you know, and regardless of whether you're in 12 or you're in 37, there are actually specific disclosure requirements that would apply if it is material.
But then I do think it's too subtle, so then I would rather do is say we've observed the two. Let me give you a process. Number one, you need to consider which one it is. By the way, if that's a significant judgment, apply ICE 1. Number two, if you consider it's in ICE 12, apply ICE 12 and the disclosure applies. You see, what I'm saying is, yep, if you read the first bit, it's like to me we've always said there's this issue, we're not addressing it full stop. Then we suddenly just throw in these things that are kind of, here's some disclosure requirements and bits and pieces. I would reword it to be a lot more, as you say, not as subtle. I would be a lot more fervent around what we would
do. Okay, that's useful for people. Reinhardt.
This discussion really just points out the comment that I was going to make, which is that I think the part A, although it's entirely consistent with what is the basis for conclusions on FRIC 23, my one worry is it's subtle and people will see this as an accounting, as a free choice. And it was interesting, Petrina, that you said, well, you referred to what I thought was very helpful, the discussion in the agenda paper in paragraphs 25 to 30 as to the analysis that is done. Is it an income tax or not? So I think my preference would be to be clearer as to what we mean in A. And then along the lines of what Bruce said, if that's a significant judgment, make sure you clarify that judgment in the notes to the class there.
Okay. Tony?
Oh, sorry.
You've been? Okay. Yeah. Bob?
I agree with a lot of Bruce's points. I think this is very subtle. I appreciate the staff's or the points that have been made that this isn't an accounting policy choice, but frankly, it's as close to an accounting policy choice without being an accounting policy choice you can get to. If you say, if an entity considers, so this is from the entity's viewpoint, and you say they consider, and you don't tell them what the parameters are in that consideration, so they can choose just about anything, but they just have to have a basis for it. I understand it's not an accounting policy choice, but in my mind, that's as close as you can get.
In which case should we rephrase A to say that if a particular amount payable or receivable is an income tax, then an entity applies A as well?
In my mind, no, because I like accounting policy choice.
Thank you for being honest, Paul.
I think it's very good decision or proposal, and I also think it's a very good way to concise describe it, and it's a principle-based standard comes through here, I think, that you consider, okay, it's either or the other. So I think this is a good example also for the other ones that we saw that were 3 pages or so to come to a conclusion. Short, concise, and the principle-based. Good.
On the point of why we were not going to take a project on, I thought that rather than it not being a higher priority, there was quite a lot of discussion previously that it really was very judgmental as to whether interest and penalties form part of the tax charge or were separately interest and penalties. And that because that would depend on the precise facts and circumstances of the jurisdiction, how the taxation authority applied penalties and interest, you might reach different judgments. So I wondered whether, rather than saying that that's that it's because it's not a higher priority, we should say that quite clearly and also refer back to previous agenda decisions where the committee has looked at the question of whether something constitutes tax or not. So there are some quite useful ones from May 2009 when we looked at tonnage taxes, and in 2006 in the scope of IS 12 when there was some discussion in those agenda decisions about what drifted you towards something being a tax and what drifted you away from something being a tax. And that then links into the comment at the end of the draft agenda decision on applying IS1, where you've got a significant judgment, because if the amounts are large and you, it really is grey which way you're going. And I can see that the disclosure might be useful. I think if that were done as a preface on that paragraph, then it would put more into context subparagraph A, because subparagraph A is then explaining how you apply that judgment and the approach that you ought to be taking, having applied the judgment of whether something's a tax or whether it's not a tax.
My primary comment was to echo what some others have said, to really point to something other than prioritization as to why we're not taking it on the agenda. I don't know if it might be helpful to look at the handbook in terms of what are the criteria of what we would take on the agenda, and perhaps refer back to those.
Okay, I want to concur with everybody else. You know, this is not, I mean, this is a policy choice that needs a lot of significant judgment. That should be clarified in the agenda this evening. So I concur with that. But besides that, I have two comments. The first comment is that the interest and penalties are not always material for all entities, but could be very material for some entities. So let me give you my example. The Korea had one financial institution. About 2 years ago, they got the tax refund. The total amount of the tax refund was $0.47 billion. And the interest and penalties in that was $0.18 billion, about 40% of whole the tax refund. And the net profit of the company in that year was $1.7 billion, means that interest and penalty takes more than 10% of the net profit of the year. So I think this issue is not that light issue. It could be very serious for some companies in some instances. So if the board revisit IAS 12, I want the board to think about this issue very seriously. That's my comment. One comment. And the other one is actually a question. You know, when I read paragraph 30 at page 8 of the agenda paper, the third line, it says, we think it is the notion of a net amount that identified amount of interest and penalties may fail to meet. So this sentence sounds like that, you know, the interest and penalties are not within the scope of IAS 12. Then why we bother the entities to think about IAS 12? So I really do not, you know, understand what is the real meaning of this sentence in the agenda paper.
I suppose I'll add to say that what's included in that section, and in particular the part you highlight, I suppose, is us giving our staff view that if we were sitting in the position of you know, maybe, you know, looking at this, that you know, where do we think, you know, how would our analysis work? And in particular there, it's important, I think we said, we there say we think it's the notion of a net amount that identified amounts of interest and penalties may fail to meet. I think often there, I imagine in practice, there may be some questions about, you know, are there actually identified amounts of interest and penalties, or are you just paying one amount of income tax that doesn't include interest and penalties? So I suppose we only say if we were sitting in the shoes of making the analysis, that's a thought that we would go through. The reason we didn't build that into the agenda decision as we think that is kind of our view, and it's a bit interpretive in a sense. It goes beyond anything that are in the words. We didn't think it would be appropriate to build that.
You know, I really don't really understand the point of it. And, naturally, the interest and penalties are gross amount. Taxes are based on net amount. So naturally, those two things are not the same. So this sentence, if anybody just read it as it is, they would think that IAS 12 is not applied to the interest and penalties at all.
I think Petrina's putting on quite a bit of emphasis on the word identified, if I understood her explanation. So if you're paying a total amount to the tax authority, which is $500 for taxes and penalties, and there's no specificity on the amount that is the penalty, but then that wouldn't be an identified amount, so that might all be rolled into taxes, I think is the point that she was making.
Yeah, and I suppose all we're saying is we don't have words, and even in the context of, you know, I think when we were talking about it here, Young, so even in a previous paper, we had a particular definition of interest and penalties in mind. And of course, we don't have any words in our literature about exactly what our interest and penalties, etc. So I suppose we're a bit clouded. We're trying to be, in just writing the paper, I suppose we sometimes try to be helpful and go a bit further and provide our staff views. We accept that we don't necessarily carry all of that through, because if we think, you know, that's just our views that go beyond the requirements, then we don't carry it into the agenda decision. And I suppose that's all we were doing. But because there isn't neither a definition of interest and penalties or anything else in the literature, it's quite hard to be very far with that, I think.
Understood.
Bertrand?
No, I mostly agree with, I totally agree, sorry, with Mikael's comments. I think on such a question, the agenda decision and its proposed wording as it stands is clearly fine with me. And notably, paragraph A, I think it reflects perfectly the wide varieties of situations depending on jurisdictions and on each specific tax you might encounter in each in one or another specific jurisdiction. So I think on a group-wide basis, where when you're implemented worldwide, it's something that probably is or will better help us to assess how to account for each specific tax in each specific jurisdiction. I can understand John's comments on explaining why we do an agenda decision, but otherwise the agenda decision as worded is pretty. I think it's a good answer.
I agree with Bertrand and all the others here. I would go for that agenda decision. I heard policy choice several times. It's really important that's no policy choice, and that this is also has to be evaluated jurisdiction by jurisdiction. That is not something which is applied in a uniform way within a group, within different jurisdictions. And if you read the first sentence of the agenda decision, it sounds a little bit at the standard setter would be too lazy or so to come up with a solution for that. So therefore, already in the first sentence, I would already include the why. So why not saying IFRS standards do not specifically address the accounting for interest and penalties related to income taxes, as the outcome is highly depending on local tax law and has to be evaluated for each jurisdiction separately. And then, I mean, it's a little bit different sounding. I mean, you can write whatever you like, but I guess for marketing purposes, it's a little bit I'm not a marketing
person. I hate people to think we're lazy. Carl?
I'm also comfortable with this agenda decision, other than the part of the high priority.
Thank you. Bob?
I'm still not sure if we're all on the same page on this agenda decision, on what it means. And so let me ask this. Let's say I have two entities in the same jurisdiction with the exact same tax position and both paying interest and penalties. So same facts and circumstances. Are we saying that in that case that we would expect both entities to reach the same judgments and to present the income, the interest and penalties in the same place? And if so, then what are we telling them is then what they have to base that judgment on? Because we're not.
Definition of income tax is the highest 12.
Yes. But I'm not sure that is sufficient to address how to assess whether interest and penalties are tax or not.
That is what we're saying. Yeah. You might not think there's enough there, but I think the simple answer to your question is we're saying that it's not a policy choice, it's based on your assessment of the definition and your facts and circumstances.
But that's what I'm trying to bring out is, yes, we're pointing to, okay, go back to the definition of a tax, but I don't think the definition of tax is sufficient for those two entities to reach the same conclusion. They're going to weight things differently, and they could see things differently and come to different judgments.
Is there a problem with that?
They could, but I think that's slightly different to saying it's just a straight-out policy choice, right? Yeah.
Because I think what you're identifying, Bob, and I'm not disagreeing, is obviously there have been questions that have come to the committee some time ago about the scope of IS 12 and exactly the definition of income tax. So I think we know there are questions out there about the definition. It was highlighted in the board's paper last year when they talked about whether to add a project in IS 12. So I'm not saying I disagree with you that I think the definition of income tax, you know, makes it very clear, that assessment, but I think it probably goes... It's about the definition of income tax that affects interest and penalties, but also affects other things.
Shall we try and wrap this up? So the staff's recommendation is to finalise the agenda decision as set out in Appendix A, but I've heard a few suggestions, and maybe I'll start with those, and Katrina, tell me if I've missed any. I think a lot of people have raised the point that we need to have a better articulation of why we're not undertaking standard setting. So look at that. And I think on that, some of the words in particular that John suggested about how much of a standard financial reporting problem we've got might be what we could look at there. I'm going to test this one and see if you agree, but I think some of you would have thought it might be useful to be a little less subtle. Therefore, to maybe say in the lead-in before little A, nonetheless, the committee observed that it wasn't an accounting policy choice, and therefore, we've got A and B. I'll take a vote on that because I'm not sure that was a unanimous view. And also, the other suggestions I heard were to make it more clear that if it was a significant judgment to make this assessment of whether you're in 12 and 37, to emphasise the disclosure around that. And also, Andrew made a suggestion about perhaps being useful to remind people of the other agenda decisions on what's an income tax, to at least provide a little bit of help, because I don't disagree with Bob that we don't have too many signposts for people to use, even though we're saying it's not a policy choice. So with those, did I miss any?
You didn't miss any. I was going to add one other suggestion, which was only, and it was based on something you said, Bruce, which I understand, but it is the second sentence in the agenda decision that talks about what respondents said. I'm just wondering whether we just take out that sentence, because I could see there's possibly confusion in that with what we'll say later, because it could be viewed as being, we are saying people can apply IS 12 or IS 37. So given that it's just a bit of background and it could be misunderstood, I might suggest taking out that second sentence. Obviously still highlight that this question came about because of comments received on the draft interpretation, but just...
I guess it's also consistent with other non-agenda decisions, because in general we are not writing what is the opinion of respondents.
Yes.
Okay, so with those suggestions, could I get a show of hands on whether the committee agrees with finalising the agenda decision?
Sorry, so just a question. You were going to find out whether people thought the wording was too subtle? And
well, I'm suggesting that we add that in. So if you vote now,
you're
agreeing with my suggestion, which I think is probably why Bob doesn't have his hand up.
So you're saying this is...
Sorry. So it's not clear to me if you're asking the committee now about revising the wording to be slightly less subtle.
Yes.
So it's going to say,
nonetheless, the committee observed that it's not an accounting policy choice, and then go on to the following.
Okay.
Okay, yeah. So another show of hands.
My hand is up.
13.
Now we'll go back to 5A.
So before you do, not a comment about the decision that the committee just reached, but I think it's the environmental effect of sitting in regulator row down here at this end of the table. But it just struck me as I was reading this paper, I was a bit surprised to see how much more information was available from the U.S. GAAP financial statements. If you look at paragraph 17, than there were from the IFRS financial statements. I guess I'm just expressing a hope that the committee's discussion around this issue will be a prompt for people to reconsider whether there's a material disclosure that they should be making under IFRSs about how they have approached accounting for interest and penalties.
I think that's a good point.
I'm not suggesting that they capture it. I'm just asking the people around this table and listening to this meeting to be maybe messengers around that issue, to make you even more popular in your jurisdiction.
Say to increase your popularity.
We're always disciples of good disclosure.
We need to move away from regulators.
That's the point.
Okay, so moving on now to agenda paper 5A on IFRS 9. Craig?
So agenda paper 5A is on financial assets eligible for the OCI presentation election. In May, the committee published a tentative agenda decision in response to a submission asking whether the holder of a financial instrument can use the presentation election in paragraph 4.1.4 of IFRS 9 for a financial instrument that has all the features and meets the conditions in paragraph 16A to 16D of IS 32. The committee observed that the presentation election refers to particular investments in equity instruments. Equity instruments are defined term, and Appendix A of IFRS 9 specifies as defined in paragraph 11 of IS 32. The instrument described in the submission does not meet the definition of an equity instrument in IS 32. Rather, applying paragraph 11 of IS 32, such an instrument meets the definition of a financial liability, but, as an exception, is classified as an equity instrument by the issuer. Accordingly, the committee concluded that a financial instrument described in paragraph 16A to 16D of IS 32 is not eligible for the presentation election in paragraph 4.1.4 of IFRS 9. The committee received three comment letters. All respondents agreed with the committee's technical analysis and conclusion. However, two respondents raised wider concerns with the holder's accounting for long-term interests that they think the board should address. And we understand that the board is aware of these concerns. Furthermore, we update the board on all matters discussed by the committee after each committee meeting, and we will include this matter in the next such update. Therefore, we think no further action is required by the committee in this respect. One respondent said that, in their opinion, paragraph BC 5.21 of IFRS 9 contains significant guidance on the application of the presentation election. However, we think the requirements of IFRS 9 and IS 32 provide a clear and adequate basis for the holder to classify those instruments. We think paragraph BC 5.21 merely confirms a particular effect of the board's decision. We think no further action is required by the committee in this respect, and we recommend finalising the agenda decision. The proposed wording is outlined in Appendix A, and this is unchanged from the tentative agenda decision. I will now ask whether you agree with our recommendation to finalise the agenda decision.
I'm nodding. Any comments, Andrew?
I agree with finalising the agenda decision. Just picking up on some of the comment letters on the question of paragraph BC 521, I think in the last sentence of the penultimate paragraph, there might be a slight redrafting of the wording, just to make it clear that we're focusing on what 32 and 9 say rather than BC. And so perhaps something like, rather saying that this conclusion is supported by the board's explanation, to say that this conclusion on the basis of the requirements set out in IS 32 and IFRS 9 is consistent with the board's explanation would get us across that and would perhaps address that point.
Suggestion. Any other comments? Show of hands. Not for Bruce.
As per my original comments, I don't agree with
the
I remember.
And Sandy, do you agree with publishing this final agenda decision on 5A?
Yep.